Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 110 of Season 3 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is Todd Liebenow from the Forgotten Filmcast. Welcome back, Todd.
Thank you very much. I am ready to duke it out here on this last minute that
I should hope so. I should hope so. So, minute 110 begins with Powell trying to contact John, who has a gun to his face, and ends with Thornburg causing more trouble with his report. So yesterday we ended things with John discovering lots and lots of C4, not C3, explosives, all around the roof. And he tries to tell Powell about it, and as he's telling him, he gets a gun barrel pushed into his cheek, and it goes deeper and deeper in his cheek. And he just stops talking, and this minute begins with a shot of hearing Powell say, "John? John? John, come in. Did you get that?" No, he turns to the guy next to him and goes, "Did you get that?" And the guy next to him is actually... Did you recognize him? You ever seen him in anything before?
Oh, I'm sure I have, but I couldn't pinpoint it.
Okay, well, in this movie, he's known as a young cop. All right, that's his. It's Anthony Peck, who was also in The Hunt for Red October, and surprisingly, he was also in Die Hard with a Vengeance. He played the detective named Ricky, who was a friend of John's. He's the guy who gets shot, and they take his badge, and then John notices the badge later on.
So maybe he actually, because we know from Die Hard 2 that John goes to work in L.A. So maybe it's the same guy. Maybe he met him in L.A. and they became such good buddies that when John said, "I'm going back to New York," then he said, "Well, I'm going with you."
Hey, why not? Yeah, that might work. Powell turns to Ricky and asks him. I'm just going to call him Ricky anyway, because,
makes sense. He's Ricky. He's Ricky. From now there on, you go. He's Ricky.
And he goes, "No, did you get that?" He goes, "No."
So now we've got a Ricky and a Lucy in this scene. There you go. I just realized, but that's right. No, I'm getting off course.
That's very good. Very good. And he basically says, "No, something about a double cross." And I love Powell's response. He goes, "Tell me about it."
Mm-hmm.
which goes back to what we were talking about earlier in this week, where both sides, both Hans and Johnson think that they are outsmarting the other. And
right.
Anyone looking from the side sees that both of them are, are trying to double cross. That's what they're doing here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the shot goes back. First of all, we see the helicopters flying in the distance, as Powell says, "Tell me about it." He sees the helicopters on their way towards Nakatomi. So, I mean, mm-hmm. these guys got on in the helicopters pretty quickly.
They did. Well, we know from other movies that,
time is different.
High-tech, well-armed. Well, and, high-tech, well-armed helicopters are just, like on every street corner in LA. I mean, think about, like Terminator 2 and Blue Thunder and things like that. They're everywhere, so.
That's true. That's a very good point. And then the shot changes and we're back to John. Right. And we see that, it actually is Carl. We see John turning and seeing that it's Carl who's holding the gun to him. And, now, there's something that I don't get here. Carl then starts saying to him, "We are both professionals. This is personal." But, if you're a professional, then just kill him and that's it.
Exactly. I'm thinking, based on the rage we've seen out of Carl in the movie prior to this, that, pretty much... he would have planted that gun barrel in John's cheek, and it would have taken about a half a second more for him to,
Exactly. That's it. Opening. And it would have caused another opening also on the other side. But You know, obviously it has to do with the fact that, you know, Scripps need for the bad guys to tell everyone their plan, or, you know, take their time doing things that they need to do, like like Marco a long time ago, you know, where he tells John, you know, let me give you advice, next time you have a chance to shoot someone, don't hesitate. You know, maybe Marco should have actually said this to Carl.
He should have.
That might have helped.
Yeah.
Who knows?
I guess, you know, Carl maybe doesn't deserve the high ranking he's got in Hans's organization here. Maybe it should have been Marco.
Because my whole question also is that what does professionalism have to do with this here? Who cares? You want revenge? Kill him. That's it.
Mm. Yeah.
Or disable him first.
Doesn't
or
matter. Whatever. How you do it. Just do it.
You know, and
now I mm-hmm. have a quick question about Carl. And you may have covered this previously. I'm not sure. But how is with Carl's name spelled in the credits?
Yes.
With a K. Okay. Because that's actually a pretty uncommon spelling, at least stateside it is. Now, I know that Carl's not from the States here. The reason I know this is because I have a friend whose name is Carl, spelled with a K, and he's always thrilled whenever he meets another Carl with a K.
Has he ever but met there's Carl a scene
earlier back?
You know, from Die Hard?
No, I'm sure he hasn't. You know, I mean, you know, like we have Carl's Juniors out here. Right. That's Carl with a C. You know, that's a restaurant chain. But, I remember when he writes the names down on his arm, John writes Carl with a K. And I always, when I see that, I think, how does he know that it's Carl with a K? Because early, you know, the more common way of spelling Carl in the U.S. is Carl with a C.
Maybe he knows about international terrorism.
He must be. You know, so you're saying that Carls with a K are more likely to be an international terrorist. So I should be, you know, especially on the lookout whenever I'm around.
I think so.
Carl with a K.
I think so. He could be a sleeper.
Yeah.
You should be careful there.
You might be. When I always was like, I remember when this came out, I found Alexander Gudinov an odd choice for playing a terrorist mercenary type of guy. Now, don't get me wrong. I like what he does in this movie a lot. But I always remember, I was like, wait a minute. Yes. That guy was a dancer, you know, And here he is, this, you know, I mean, he's the boss, basically. This is the boss battle of the movie. You know what I mean? He's worked his way through other lower level bad guys. And now this is the boss battle. And, you know, I always thought he was an odd choice for that. But I don't get me wrong. I think they made the right choice. I like him in this. But I always, when I hear that name, Alexander Gudinov, I go, oh, yeah, he was a ballet dancer.
He was a ballet dancer in a few 80s movies. You know, what other movies can you think of that he was in?
He's in Witness.
Okay.
He's not a ballet dancer in that.
No.
He's Amish. Here we go on the Amish again.
There you go, Bubba. We got Amish.
He's in that. He's the Amish guy in that scene where they go to Fuddruckers for hamburgers.
He's actually, you know that he plays the same character again in another movie. Do you know what movie?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. What was that?
He plays in Witness. In Witness, he plays Daniel Hochleitner. Okay, and then he's in another film 9 years later, playing the exact same character in a very short scene. You know, he doesn't.
Yes,
it's a cameo. Directed by Rob Reiner.
Oh, North. He's in North.
That's right.
Yes. Oh man. But yeah, no, yeah. So Witness, and he was like the rival suitor, I want to say, to Shelley Long in The Money Pit, if I remember correctly.
That's correct. He was the cellist, I think.
Right.
Wait, cellist or violinist? I don't remember. He was something.
I was going to say, I don't think he was a ballet dancer. I wanted to say he was a musician.
He was a musician, yes. Sort. Max Bizart, something like that. Yes, who was trying to woo Shelley Long.
Yeah.
Unsuccessfully, because come on, how can you woo someone away from Tom Hanks?
No, but I mean, I like him. I like him in this movie, especially in this fight scene, because like the long hair is so perfect for this fight scene. because with all the punches being thrown and all the moving around, the hair is just flowing. Yes. It's magical.
Completely. You're right. But he does two very strange things right at the beginning. Do you notice what he does?
Well, are we talking when he's still got the gun in John's face? So he tosses the gun.
He grabs
Phyllis's gun and tosses
it. That's right. He tosses the pistol. And what's the second thing that he does?
And then he grabs the CB and like smashes it on the ground.
Yeah. Which again, like why? How does that help him? By smashing it on the ground.
It doesn't. It's just that vengeance thing again.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess there's not really another opportunity to talk to Al in this, but it pretty much establishes that he can't get any more help from Al.
Right. And we actually don't even see him stomp on it. We just see him drop it to the floor and then make a stomping, like his body moves in a stomping motion.
Right.
We don't see his feet.
I actually had to rewatch it because the first time I thought, does he just toss it and we hear it break? Or does he toss it and he actually stomps on it? But I think he does stomp on it.
Yes, he stomps. He's a stomper. And John takes that opportunity and, you know, uses his left arm, pushes the gun up out of the way, even though, you know, he feigns pain a little bit. Beforehand, we hear him, say, oh, and, like he's groaning a little bit. And then he takes his left arm and, you know, flips it up and knocks the gun out of the way. You know, I guess assuming that Carl is not paying as much attention because it's more important for him to be, you know, stomping on the CB.
Yes.
And, you know, he uses this as a distraction and gets the machine gun away. And then we get another shot of John pushing Carl forcefully into a whole bunch of oil barrels, which they all fall over very simply, which probably means that they're empty.
They're clearly empty.
They're empty.
Yeah. Which I was, my first thought was like, first of all, what's in, you know, what would have been in those barrels? I don't know. Again, I know nothing about construction and things like that, so I'm not sure what they would have had, but yeah, I think that with the way they move, they're clearly not holding anything. That's always one of my pet peeves is when you have in movies where you have like, you know, something that is supposed to be full, but you can tell that it wasn't.
Right.
Because I mean, why would they fill it on the movie set? You know, but like the one that gets me every time is like when you have somebody drinking out of a cup from a fast food, or they've got like a Starbucks cup and they set it down and you can clearly hear from the sound when they set it down that cup is empty, that it is absolutely empty.
Right. Well, that goes back to my season one with The Great Escape, where, you know, the three Americans are all taking a swig from the cup and it's so easy to tell that they're all faking it.
Right. I mean, I guess they could have used up all the, you know, whatever was in those barrels already in the construction project, but or else they just store empty barrels up here on this floor. I guess it's the empty barrel storage floor.
Yes. Yeah. So do you know how much? I mean, there's a measurement known as a barrel, right? So do you know what that measurement is and what the number of you know, how much an actual barrel holds?
The I don't know the measurement, but an actual barrel holds one hobbit. See what I did there? See what I did? Yes, come on.
That's right. That's right. No, that's fine. So. That's fine. No, but the hobbit doesn't. You could probably put two hobbits in there.
It depends on how big they are. I mean, you like could stuff the them big in there. One. You know, what's his name? Bomber. You definitely couldn't fit any other hobbits in there with him. You know, but maybe a young hobbit.
Right.
Maybe,
okay. You know, all right. That's true.
Frodo and or Merry and Pippin. Maybe Merry and Pippin, you can fit them one because they're both skinny guys. Sam's a little on the pudgy side, so you can't put Sam and somebody else in it, you know.
Right. Well, how are supposed to be on the pudgy side? So a barrel as the unit of measurement is 42 gallons. All right. And an actual barrel actually holds 55 gallons.
Okay.
So it's pretty funny that, you know. I guess maybe they used to use, you know, 42-gallon barrels, and then they changed them, and the measurement stayed or something like that. That I'm not really sure of, but I just find it very funny, the fact that it, you know, that it's not accurate. I mean, the measurement of an oil barrel originated in the early Pennsylvania oil fields back in the late 1850s. And then when they had the oil boom in the 1860s and things like that. So they back then did use 42 gallon barrels, which is based on the Old English wine measure, which is 159 liters. It's known as a tierce.
I've never heard that before.
And then you have then they started using whiskey barrels, which were 40 gallon barrels, which is 151.4 liters. Okay, and then they started using the 45 gallons, which are 170 liters. At a certain point, they decided to change it and started using 55 liter barrels. Yeah, in 1872, the standard was still the standard was established as 42 gallons. And in modern times, many different types of oils, chemicals, and other products are transported in steel drums. In the U.S., these commonly have a capacity of 55 gallons and are referred to as such. They are also called 210 liters or 200 kilograms outside the U.S. In the U.K. and its former dependencies, a 44 imperial gallon drum is used, even though all of those countries now officially use the metric system and the drums are filled to 200 liters. Thus, the 42-gallon oil barrel is a unit of measure, and it's no longer a physical container used to transport crude oil, as most petroleum is moved in pipelines or oil tankers.
But of course, you know, the best use of the barrel is going over Niagara Falls in a barrel, you know.
Yes, of course. Of course. Or you can just be playing, you know, on the side of Niagara Falls and just hope that, you know, there's some honeymooners around that are going to come and save you. Yeah, that's a possibility too.
My favorite movie moment with Niagara Falls in a barrel is there's a great Woody Woodpecker cartoon, which I don't remember the name of it right now, but the whole gimmick of the cartoon is that Woody Woodpecker wants to go over Niagara Falls in a barrel. And so, and then the running gag throughout the film is that that he keeps sending the enemy. I don't remember if it's Wally Walrus or one of the other characters, but the enemy keeps end up going over the falls in the barrel. And there's always, every time he goes over, they repeat the same shot. There's these people in the yellow raincoat standing on the stairways that go along the side of the falls. And every time he goes over the falls in the barrel, they go, yeah! Anyway.
I'll have to try and find that. That would be very fun to link to that. Now, so Carl bangs up against these oil drums, and John starts pounding
him. Does he ever? You know,
punch for punch. I remember back in the 80s, there was an arcade game, you know, which you can do boxing. I'm trying to remember what it was called, but I remember that whenever you do a body shot, it would say body blow, body blow. I can't remember the name of the game. I actually played it this past summer when I was in the States.
But I know what you're thinking of there. I remember seeing something like that. But
I actually, one of the things that I did when I was in the States back in the summer was go to a place in Morristown, New Jersey, where they have all of these old arcade games. Where you pay per time.
Yeah.
You don't pay per game.
Like that out here too.
And that was just a lot of fun. I went there with my son and one of my nephews, and we were there for like an hour and a half. Mm-hmm. It was like $47 or something like that. And it was it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I took a bunch of my son's friends to a place like that several years ago, and it was really cool. You know, they kind of had a balance between older games and new games. If you're really into like the old games and you come out here,
I think it was called Punch Out. I think it is Punch Out.
Okay, well, if you ever come out to Colorado, you or any listeners, but in Colorado Springs, one of my favorite places, if you're into old video games, there's an arcade in Manitou Springs, which is just outside Colorado Springs. It's called the Manitou Arcade, and it's got all these old machines, and we're talking about not just video games, but like old penny arcade type of machines from, you know, like turn of the century type of things, you know, stuff like that. So it's wonderful, just the amazing stuff that they have there, pinball machines and you know, all this wild stuff. So when you said you went to an old arcade, that's what popped into my mind. Is really fantastic.
Yeah, so it is Punch Out. That is the game that that we're talking about, which is quite cool. The one drawback of playing in an arcade like that, where you don't have to keep putting coins in, where you can just keep playing, is that your character can never really die in any game. You know, because when they give you the 10 seconds to continue, it just lets you continue.
For the ones that did there are a lot of older games that didn't do that.
Yeah, for sure. But it was still, it gets a little boring after a while that you do that.
Yeah, I try to float around to as many different machines as I can. So.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it definitely was Punch Out. You know, where you fight Glass Joe.
That's
the first guy.
You got to figure out each way they move. Each one of them has a little tell that they do before they throw a punch. And if you can catch that and you duck out of the way at the right moment, and then you punch them back, and then you can keep on punching them until you knock them out. So.
Correct. Very good. So he's given all these body blows to Carl, and we see Carl's hair flying all over the place, like you mentioned before. You know, it's a good thing that he didn't, need to wear a wig here, because it would have flown off with the way that he's, shaking his head back and forth the whole time. Yep. Then John misses a shot, and Carl takes that up and, blocks him and is able to, he does like a wrestling move on John's arm, and he twists it around and is able to punch him in the face. John falls down, and then Carl kicks him, and as John gets up, he kicks him in the face. The fight scene is choreographed pretty well. They do a nice job of making the two of them seem somewhat like equals,
right?
With the way that that it all goes.
You can, if you really want to break it down, I think, see a difference in their techniques. They're equals, but they approach the fight differently. I think, you see a little bit more precision in what Carl is doing, and what John is doing is a bit more rough and tumble, street fighter type of feel, if you will, So,
well, again, John is streetwise.
Yeah.
Carl is doing, he's not street fighting. Mm-hmm. He's doing it, I guess, in a professional type of way, right. I guess you can sort of say, he said before, we're both professionals, which is also pretty funny. The fact that he says we're both professionals, because they're both very different types of professionals.
Right. Exactly.
One of them is a professional killer and the other is a professional cop. So yeah, well, we're both professionals. So. And that's all we get of the fight at this point. And then the shot changes and we get again, another view of the skyline, and we see what looks like helicopters. Well, we hear helicopters. We see the lights of helicopters, in the distance. And then they show us inside. They show our Eddie, who we haven't seen in a while. He's standing there up by one of the windows, and he goes, they're coming. Choppers are coming.
Mm-hmm.
See that Hans is getting ready to gather everything up. He goes, okay, time to gather your flock, Miss Gennaro. And as he's doing that, we see the TV is on behind him. We see little Lucy McLean on TV.
The young Mary Elizabeth Winstead. Yes.
Yes, that's right. And then we hear Thornburg say, your mom and dad. And then it gets cut off. So people have to come back on Monday to find out what about her mom and dad. But we see Hans's reaction, that he sort of notices something. We're not sure what he's noticing, because the shot pans up and we get the flare of light in, which is really cool the way that it looks. And mm-hmm. he's putting his CB in his pocket. We can see on his face that he notices something. But what does he notice? Who knows? We'll have to wait until Monday to find out.
I was just looking back at something on the scene, and there's something that you didn't mention that I thought, oh, Rob tunes into everything in these sequences that I didn't see. But there's that one shot where the helicopters are coming in after Al and Ricky are talking. And we see a building with a company name on it.
Agfa Gewerth.
Yeah.
Gesundheit.
Exactly. I was like, what is that exactly? And all I could find was a description that, like, you know, makes me go, all right, well, what does that mean? Where they say
Agfa. Well, Agfa's the name of a film company.
Well, that's something different, I think, because this thing that I saw, it says Agfa develops and manufactures imaging systems and IT solutions for the printing industry and healthcare, blah 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 blah. And I think that's what this is. This Agfa Gewerth, or however you say
Gesundheit.
It. Yeah, but what you're thinking of? Because when I saw that, I went Agfa, like the American Genre Film Archive, which is a company that releases DVDs of all kinds of, you know, like cool old exploitation films. You know,
no, that's not what I thought of. I was thinking about it's like Kodak.
Agfa is,
you know, when you know, people, old people like us who used to use, you know, cameras that actually had film in them. So you could buy film from Kodak, you can buy film from Agfa.
Oh, well, okay? That's probably related then, because, you know, like imaging.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
So, okay.
It is. So Agfa Gewerth is a Belgian-German multinational corporation that develops, manufactures, and distributes analog and digital imaging products, software, and systems. They've a number of different divisions. Their current stock price as of today, you know, which anyone could go back and try and figure out what they were recording this, is 3.02 euro, which it went up 9 points today, or 0.09 today. Actually, this is from Friday, because, you know, there was no trading today. It's a company that was founded in 1867. So yeah, it's been around for a little while.
Well, like I said, when I saw that, my brain is wired to movies, I thought of Agfa, AGFA, the American Genre Film Archive, which they release, you know, movies like She Freak and Jungle Trap and The Curious Dr. Hump, things like that. All these old exploitation films, they're kind of one of the main places out there, you know, like, you know, with labels like Vinegar Syndrome and things like that, who are, you know, kind of working to release and preserve these odd exploitation films of the past.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but yeah, you're right. I missed that. I didn't catch the sign for Agfa Gewerth, but thank you for bringing it up so that we could still talk about it.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we get into the script?
No, let's do the script.
All right. So once again, it starts off with Powell saying, Roy, hello, hello. And then he turns to the guy next to him and says, I thought you had him. And he said, I did. He said something about a double cross. And then Powell looking off, tell me about it. And then they show the helicopters in the distance. And then it says, Carl hovers over McLean, who hasn't moved a muscle. Carl says, we're both professionals, but this is personal. You are done. Wham! McLean drives his elbow into Carl's face. Carl's weapon clatters on the floor. McLean follows his first blow with another. Carl recovers and with a spinning karate kick, slams McLean back. And that's the entire fight. That's all it says in the script.
That's the whole fight.
And then we're back to the hostage floor. And it says, Eddie turns from a window where the chopper lights loom closer. And then he says, they're coming. Camera pans across the room to the doorway of the office where Hans nods, stands. And then you can hear him say, I know you're proud of your daddy. Thornburg. He hears him say, Thornburg say, I know you're proud of your daddy. And then it says, Holly is speechless, watching in shock, as the portable TV showing Thornburg at Holly's house. He's squatting down with his microphone to interview the children in their PJs. His voice is soft, comforting. because as a very brave policeman and your mom has shown just as much courage, but is there something that you would like to say to them if they're watching? And then it says, John Jr. says nothing, but Lucy looks to the camera. So, I mean, it's a little more descriptive in the script, and I think it works slightly better because in the script we get Holly's reaction also. You know, and Thornburg says a little more about the fact that your father's a cop and that your mother is. So
yeah,
they might have.
It's a bit more on the nose because in the movie as it is, it's like what we were saying about John in some previous moments where you see the light bulb go off, and we see that with Hans here where the light bulb goes off and then he flips the picture over. You know, it's not told to him on the TV screen. He puts the pieces together and figures it out. So,
okay, great. So
better in the movie. Better than
the script. I don't know. I like the way they do in the script here also. This is one of the few places where I think the script does it well, but they still do it great in the movie. There's no question about that. You know, we'll get to that next week when Hans has his light bulb moment. Yeah. So every Friday I have a segment that I call Weekend Surprise. So one of the biggest controversies of Die Hard over the last 34 years since it came out is Die Hard considered a Christmas movie or not? So what do you think, Todd? Is it a Christmas movie or is it not? And make sure to show your work.
So I think in recent years, I'd never put that much thought into it, you know, before. I just kind of was like, I could go either way. But I think in recent years, I've really had a convincing argument put in front of me by our mutual friend, Richard Kirkham. Okay.
Who will be on the final week of this episode of the show.
So he'll probably say this, you know, much better than I do, but his theory is that this whole movie does not happen if it weren't Christmas, because the whole reason that John McClane is where he is, the wrong man in the wrong place at the wrong time, is because he ended up going to this Christmas party. He wouldn't be visiting the family if it wasn't Christmas. He wouldn't be at the building if it weren't for the Christmas party. So if it wasn't Christmas, we wouldn't have the different pieces put into place for all this to happen. And I think Richard's pretty convincing with the way that he says that. Like I said, when he's on the show, I'm sure he'll do it in a much better way, because Richard was a debate coach in his previous life, and I'm sure he will be able to lay it out much better than I can. But I think he's absolutely right that you know, what we see here doesn't happen except for the fact that it's Christmas and events are happening because of the holiday. So That's my thought.
Okay, but is that your opinion, or that's your opinion based on how Richard, you know, pounded it into you and convinced you?
Oh, he didn't pound it into me. I just heard him give that once and thought, now that's the best explanation of it that I think I've ever heard. So the more I thought about it, the more I'm on Team Richard with that.
Okay, that sounds very fair. All right, so would you like, for the final time this week, this season, telling people how they can get in touch with the Forgotten Filmcast or things around about Denver.
Absolutely. So the blog is the Forgotten Films blog. So that's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. The podcast is the Forgotten Filmcast. So that's at the same place, and, you know, search for it on all the places that you find podcasts. Wherever you found this podcast, I'm sure you'll find the Forgotten Filmcast. And then my blog about cool stuff around Denver is called In and Around Denver. It's at iadenver.blogspot.com.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. All you do is a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, which is movierobminute.com. Now, I mean, Todd and I have also done some extra stuff together over the past year. Unfortunately, of the three that we've done, only one has seen the light so far. we spent a week talking about the movie Silverado. We were on episode 71 to 75 of the Silverado podcast. So you can go and find the SilveradoMinute.com, and you can listen to us talking there. We also had a great conversation about 5 minutes of the movie Stand By Me, which was for a podcast, which unfortunately will probably never see the light of day because it just, I guess it died. But Richard and I, Richard and I, but Todd and I, sorry.
It's my middle name, so that's all right.
Todd and I did record some episodes there. I might release them at some point. Maybe at the end of this season, I will release them. So, you know, people can actually just hear what we had to say about those 5 minutes of Stand By Me. If I remember correctly, they were minutes 21 to 25. Mm-hmm. And then we also spent four episodes talking about the commercials in the movie Amazon Women on the Moon, which also has yet to see the light of day. Hopefully, that the rumor is that that one will eventually debut. So I'm still holding off on that one a little bit, but we'll have to wait and see. So I want to thank you, Todd, for joining me this week, and also for joining me for all those extra episodes that are not connected to either of us. So, you know, we don't have a choice as to whether they see the light of day or not in their original format. But like I said, I'm going to do my best to make sure that at least our listeners here can hear about what we had to say about those movies. So thank you very much, Todd.
Always a pleasure. Always glad to be here. I appreciate you.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. And hopefully you'll be back for season four. I keep doing that. You'll be back for season four and season five when I finally decide what movies I'm going to do for those. So we'll have to wait and see. Hopefully there'll be movies that you'll be interested to talk about.
There are not many movies that I am not interested in talking about.
All right. So until Monday, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.